Welcome to Command Control Power, a weekly podcast hosted by three certified members of the Apple Consultants Network, drawing from nearly half a century of combined experience. We talk shop, interview vendors and colleagues, and share what we've learned while operating our technology consulting practices. This is Joe Saponari of CIMAC, and my two co-hosts are Jerry Zygmunt of MacWorks and Sam Valencia of the HCS Technology Group. We also offer a weekly email newsletter, which includes show notes for each episode. Learn more at commandcontrolpower.com. And thanks for listening.
This week's Command Control Power is sponsored by Flexdesk. Flexdesk is your help desk support that grows with your company. Go to rootedconsulting.org/Flexdesk to get started today.
Yeah, so you know, I came back from Aces and I'm trying to get my life in order here, trying to grow my business. Isn't that the whole idea behind Aces?
Yes, it was all about that this year. More so almost, you know, because of all the marketing and all the good stuff that we got.
Learn to grow your business. So I'm doing the trial with Adam Angst and his Tidbits content network. That is working out well. You sign up for the trial. You have 30 days to kick the tires and take advantage of this month's articles that Adam has written. And then you can pretty much post them anywhere and doctor them up. He encourages you to kind of customize them if you want to. And you could post them on your Google Plus page or Facebook or your blog, whatever you want to do, or you could incorporate them into a newsletter. I know you use MailChimp, Sam, and I hadn't been using MailChimp up until recently. I had been using this pay-as-you-go service called Campaign Monitor, and I'm not sure why I gravitated towards them, at least initially. I think maybe they had nicer-looking templates at the time, and even though MailChimp I think was free, it was a little, to me at the time, it seemed a little bit more complex, and MailChimp's gotten easier over the years. But what really surprised me about MailChimp is you could send up to, you could have 2,000 subscribers and they still don't charge you. It's still a free service.
At what point do they start charging you?
Over 2,000, and if I think you're sending multiple campaigns throughout the month and stuff like that. But, you know, most of the folks that listen to the show, I mean, we're lucky if we send one. If could you imagine sending two out in a month? I think that would annoy my clients. You could just use MailChimp for as long as you want, as long as you keep it under the 2,000 subscriber threshold.
Man, I wonder how they make any money on that one. 2,000.
I know. So to make it automatic, you know, Adam had come up and made a presentation at Aces and said you could make this whole thing automatic. You could tie it into WordPress and, you know, you could pick your posts that you want and you could blast out a newsletter on a regular scheduled basis and kind of almost be hands-off. That sounded kind of groovy to me. And the upshot of that is it is possible. It takes a little bit of effort. Actually, it takes a lot of effort. So I'm still working on that. I think I've got most of that down. I think the key is to at least have the blog portion of your website on WordPress. That's a huge piece of the puzzle.
So why specifically WordPress does that make a key to the puzzle for you?
MailChimp has APIs and hooks into WordPress and vice versa. And WordPress has little plugins where you could hook back into MailChimp. So in order to get this connectivity and have these two things kind of talking to one another, you know, you need an application that can do that. And so by putting your blog on WordPress, it makes that a lot easier. So even if you had your, for instance, your website custom designed by a custom designer and they used, I don't know, whatever, you know, Squarespace or something like that, or even something custom from Adobe, you could still specify that one page, which could be on WordPress. It doesn't mean you have to convert your entire website to WordPress. You could just have the blog be on WordPress.
Got it. And so you've had this going for how long now? A couple of weeks?
Yeah, a couple of weeks. I moved my blog over to WordPress, found a nice template that looked pretty good. Yeah, so I'm still putting the pieces all together. So far, so good. And the other interesting thing is that I know that you're a recent newcomer to Daylight, which is basically a CRM system for the Mac. Now it's all cloud-based. So you don't have to run any kind of a Daylight server on your local Mac. You can just simply subscribe to their cloud service and you can keep track of your clients and whether they're individuals or corporations and appointments and do pipelines and keep track of projects as they go along. And what you can do is there's other companies that provide third-party plugins, and there's this one company from Germany which provides a MailChimp plugin. So and let's say you wanted to add from your Daylight database new subscribers to your mail database. It's not like you would have to manually enter them. You could subscribe to this plugin. You know, everything's a fee, right? Everything.
Yeah, of course.
Everybody writes software now, and now you got to pay them a monthly fee. But in theory, the way this thing works is, you know, the client's already in your Daylight database, and you simply press a synchronize button, and automatically it appears as a subscriber to your MailChimp newsletter. So that's kind of nice.
That's pretty cool, actually.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I'm checking out your blog. It looks very slick, I have to say. Our blog site is pretty basic. This makes me a little jealous.
Well, that was a specific template that I found. There's literally hundreds and hundreds of templates that you can use. But this one looked nice, and you're right. It looked a little bit more ultra-modern. So I decided to go for that little eye candy.
Well, don't be surprised if you see my site mirroring this in about a week.
Well, it's not like you live close to me or anything like that. Right. It's not like we're in the same state or anything like that.
It's, you know, sometimes you end up in my backyard.
That's true. You never know. Sometimes you might see me in my kooky badged car, right? You know, painted yellow with like funny symbols on it, you know, telling you that I do Mac support or something like that.
I see where you're going with that.
Just kidding. Just kidding, folks. No branding on my car.
If you don't mind me bringing this up, you did it one time, right?
I did, and we shared that on the show.
Man, we've been doing this show for so long, I can't remember what we've already talked about.
What we talked about over a beer versus what we've talked about and actually bared our soul to the rest of the listening population.
Speaking of which, I'm kind of bummed about our train show that we were recording and had ready to go. I'm kind of bummed that it's not audio quality ready for the audience. That was a fun show to do.
Yeah, I think there was some good content. I know you did a pretty good Synology share and also Ubiquity, I believe we talked about. The problem was, as I went in to edit it, and unfortunately it'll never see the light of day because it's pretty unlistenable.
Was it me?
No, unless we have a lot of cards and letters. We had digital noise. So you know that noise when in the old days when you used to have a phone by a speaker and the phone would start to retrieve mail and it would do that dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee kind of thing?
Yeah, yes.
We got that. And it's completely distracting, and there's just no way to eliminate it. You know, you couldn't filter it out.
That's really disappointing.
It is disappointing, but we have to move on. This is life, Sam, and we just have to take
it. Let it go.
No, you're just going to have to let it go.
Oh, man. All right. I guess I will. Maybe one day I'll bring it back up and I'll say, we have to do it. Or unless, like you said, Jerry, we get a lot of cards and letters saying, you have to play that show. So we'll see what happens.
Yeah. So I think you have something to tell me, don't you, Sam?
I do, and I have you to thank for it, as a matter of fact. Recently, I had talked about an issue I was having with my friend's mom and her iCloud account. And you know how that goes, helping friends and family. But I was doing my best. Just to recap the issue, she had an issue where she had broken her old phone. She had her late husband's other phone, same model and everything. The guy at the local store had given her late husband's phone her old SIM card, popped it in there. She was able to take calls, to make calls. But obviously, all of that data wasn't hers that was on that device. So my idea was to make sure his backup was current and we can retrieve it at a later date, wipe and restore her backup to that phone. Pretty standard practice, nothing too crazy out of that. But what had happened is I went into iCloud because we were doing this remotely at the time. I went into iCloud.com, looked at her backups, and it only showed her iPad and a singular iPhone SE. That was the model of both phones. So this was unbelievable to me. It was her backup because it had finished 3 days ago, and that's when the whole incident happened. So his backup was not appearing anywhere in sight. On that show, Jerry, you had said, remember the old Time Machine issue where you had to rename a device or something along those lines, and it would back up again?
Yeah, I dug really deep, you know.
Right.
Thought outside the box. And I said, how about what would happen if you had two Macs on the network that were named the same, like iMac? Sometimes Time Machine would go wonky. Sometimes it would just append the name and not have a problem. But other times it was always good to change under the sharing preference pane the name of the iMac to something other than an iMac. So there weren't two iMacs out on the network.
Yeah. And that made sense. I just didn't. I mean, it seemed like such an old issue, and why, you know, on a network, when they auto-discover via Bonjour, for instance, they'll put a parentheses two.
I love
next
it when you
device.
Speak French, by the way.
I took this advice and I'm like, okay, you know what? I'll give it a shot. What can it hurt? I wasn't hopeful, to be honest.
Right, it was
with
a wacky
you.
Idea. Yeah.
It was yeah. Just- I was like, all right, Jerry, I'll take it and I'll run with it. I'm going to see her tomorrow night. So I go and I still see the same issue. I have both phones in front of me. They're both, and you had mentioned, are they both called iPhone when you go to General About?
Right.
So I went and I looked and they're both called iPhone. So I'm like, all right, you know what? I'll change the old phone to iPhone SE. I put it in there. I hit backup now. I refresh iCloud and both phones show up in there. They're both current with each of their backups. One is wow. iPhone and this one was iPhone SE. And I was blown away wow. that this worked. I texted you right away.
I know.
And I said, I cannot believe this, Jerry. And so it was brilliant. Such a simple fix, but I didn't even come close to considering it. And so I, at that point, I was able to proceed. So I confirmed the backup was good, wiped it, restored her old backup. She was happy as anything. So that was a nice end to that story.
This is why we're Apple specialists. Here's my suspicion, too. I bet both backups were there, you know, all along.
Right. I wasn't doubting that it was there. This little tweak allowed it to be seen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know? There's probably something just server side that if they're named the same for whatever reason, you know, they were just on top of one another. I venture to say that they were probably both there. But, you know, that would have been a real risky thing to do for your client, especially because of the sensitivity of the nature of the call. You know, her husband had passed and, you know, you wouldn't want to be the guy to have wiped out that data.
Exactly. That was making me very nervous.
Right.
So
even though it may never be retrieved again, you know, restored to another phone or something like that, you know, she would always remember that.
In addition, I actually plugged it into my computer and via image capture, downloaded all the photos and videos manually just to have a local copy of those. And I gave them to them. So that makes me feel a bit better. But there were, you know, there were text messages here and there that they wanted to keep for sentimental reasons. So that was obviously an emotional aspect to that. So, but it was nice that we had that happy ending to that story. But the funny thing afterwards was one thing that I know about her account. She uses an old email account from her ISP, which some of those ISPs, they provided those free pop email accounts.
Sure.
So it restores everything to her phone, of course, but then it retrieves messages from the mail server. 2 days later, she texts me and says, I have, you know, 19,000 new emails in my mailbox on my phone. What do I do? And she's freaking out. And I had told her before we left that day that I said, look, this is, I don't use the word pop because I try not to throw jargon at them. But I said, this is an older style mail account that is going to re-retrieve messages. We should clean it up. And she goes, oh, no, I don't want to do that. And I said, okay. A couple days later, I got the call, of course. So, you know, you have to deal with little things like that. With pop mail, it's just ridiculous. No synchronicity between any of the devices.
Well, that's the thing. You know, a couple of shows back, we had shared a story where, I don't know, you or I or Joe, someone had parted the waters, you know, like Moses, and restored data and brought it back. And then they're complaining that they have too many emails in their inbox. It's like, can't win. Those are residential clients, you know, all the time.
Well, those little things happen. I cannot stand the look of pop email, but sometimes you deal with it. She doesn't want to change to Gmail and all that stuff, so I'm not going to force her. But I basically told her, tap edit, mark all, and deselect a few current ones that you want to keep, and then just trash them. I don't know if she actually did it, but we'll see.
Right. A lot of work there.
Anyway, a big thank you again, because that was an unbelievable great ending to that. Thanks to you.
I'll be looking for my Amazon gift certificate in the mail.
Send a bill first.
So did you reboot your router, Sam? Did you reboot your router?
Yeah, my Linksys router at home? No, I didn't.
your crappy Netgear router. How many calls did you get yesterday in regards to that?
Oh, my God. Oh, such an unbelievable amount of calls and emails. How about you?
Only a couple. But there were actually two clients that I reached out to. You don't have to have a crappy Netgear router. Some of the Nighthawks, you know, ones that are a little bit better than the regular Netgear routers, had this issue as well. I believe like the 9000s. two cases I logged in, made sure they were patched, and just had them power cycle it. You know, yeah. And somehow, you know, the fact that the word was handed down from the FBI just added a little bit more credibility to me taking it just slightly more seriously. And the clients, of course, were, you know, freaking.
Yeah, it was in the New York Times as well. So that was a legitimate concern for people that was that were reading that in the paper.
And did you have to make any specific contact with anybody that you were concerned about?
Most of the inquiries that I've dealt with were via our support ticket via Zendesk. And some people, of course, old news, but we have Ubiquiti in a lot of places. So I had them, if it hadn't already been upgraded, I had them upgrade the firmware or I did it for them depending on the client style. And we took it from there. But it, like you said, you take it a bit more seriously because of the nature of the source. So even if it wasn't an affected device, you take that opportunity to patch whatever you need to.
Right. Yeah, the actual affected list was pretty short. TP-Link, you know. How many of those do you recommend to a client?
Yeah, exactly.
You know, it was the long holiday here in the United States. Did you do any work over Memorial Day?
The next, let's see, 5 years of Memorial Days and Labor Days are going to be taken up by soccer tournaments. So I was at a soccer tournament for most of the weekend, which is I actually enjoy watching my daughter play and stuff, but I didn't get any real yard work done. But I hate that stuff anyway. Or are you talking about real work?
No, I was talking about real work. Yeah, I did. This is a lead in. This is a kind of a, you know, I'm leading you down the path where you're going to say, how about you? You know, and then I get to share my story.
Would you like me to drop that for you?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. No, I didn't have any real work. Most of my clients were off, and the home clients I kind of ignore on Memorial Day. How about you, Jerry?
I won't edit that out. I'll leave that in. Oh, nice of you to ask, Sam. On Saturday, I had two 27-inch iMacs that I upgraded to Samsung 1TB Evo SSD drives, so that went pretty smoothly, smooth sailing. I will make one negative shout-out to iFixit. It seems like those glue strips that you can get exclusively from iFixit, there's other companies. I'm sure MacSales sells them as well for the 21-inch and 27 when you have to re-glue the screen. It seems like the actual like Mylar-based material has changed. I mean, it looks the same from the outside, but when I peeled back, sometimes there's that rare occasion where I need to kind of reseat it, where it sort of drops down, and then I can very easily reset it again. For whatever reason, the glue strip has changed, and it's actually quite stretchy, you know, almost like silly putty, you know. So I kind of had to I had to peel back and reset it, and all of a sudden it was like almost as long as the whole bottom panel of the computer. So I'm like, oh, darn these guys. But it all went well. I had extras.
I was going to ask you that because the first couple times I did these, and you know how I feel about hardware repairs, but first couple times I did them, I only ordered the kit that I needed, and it only took one time for me to screw it up and have to wait a couple days for a new order for me to realize, okay, I should have a few of these on hand.
Kind of good about that, but not always. You know, sometimes I play it pretty close, and sometimes I just do those and I only have one. And I'm like, how bad could it get?
Well, you could stretch it.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. So I don't know. I'm thinking about maybe reaching out to them and just running that by them, but I'm sure they source that out from China. And how could you affect the supply chain like that? You know, I think it would be pretty hard. The other repair I did was on Sunday, Memorial Day Sunday, I had a client and they have a Drobo FS, and it's a printing shop. And at the time, I was the person who recommended that for them. I figured it would be self-sufficient. They'd be able to monitor it and work with it. And every time I go in there, they use it, right, for storing files. But they're like, yeah, you know, that thing over there, I don't know, what is that thing? What is that again? See the little blue rectangle on your desktop that says servers or files that you connect to and you store files and you retrieve files? I said, that's that over there. And they're like, oh, yeah, okay. And then the next time I come in again, they go, that thing over there. So anyway, the Drobo, for whatever reason, the fan, the bearings in the fan were shot on this Drobo FS. And it was like 5 or 6 years old. And so I said, well, no problem. We'll just take it apart and we'll replace the fan. So I went online and tried to source out the fan. And there had been users on the internet who have replaced these fans, mostly because they're noisy. So there's a number of people that say, oh, you know, we found this fan or we found that fan and it's whisper quiet. You know, as long as you get the right size and then the right voltage and they're moving enough cubic feet per minute, you know, you have a compatible fan. So I found this web blog where this guy had posted that he had replaced the fan, and he put several fan models, and I found one of them on Amazon. It was like $9 or something like that. So I ordered it up, show up at their place. And the problem with the fan was eventually stopping. So the Drobo would spontaneously shut down for them. And then they would have to power cycle it. And I would say, well, that's good. You know, it's going into protection mode. And because the box inside is getting too hot, those drives are getting too hot because the fan's not running. You know, this is something we want to definitely fix sooner rather than later. So I figured, well, you know, how long could it take me to install this fan? So I do a complete take apart of this Drobo, like a little Chinese puzzle, and I put in the new fan. And the new fan had four wires instead of two. On the old Drobo fan, it was basically black and red, right? Hot and ground. The new fan had a black, which was good, but there was no red for what was the hot wire. They had a green, a blue, and a yellow.
Sounds like you're dismantling a bomb.
Yeah, right, exactly.
Which one do I cut?
You know, when you have a four wire like that, I found out through doing some Google foo that the yellow is the hot wire, right? I know people are listening to this yelling it into their
radios.
iPhone. Yeah. Of course it's the yellow.
Remember Richard Wingfield at Aces? He was saying that. Sometimes I yell it, but he's probably doing that right now.
Driving in the car, you scream, it's yellow, you fool. Yeah, so I wire up the yellow. I don't reassemble the entire box. I know from experience not to do that. And I plug it in, and the fan doesn't spin up. Mm. And I'm like, oh, man. You know. So I went back, and I tried to find a documents, and I'm thinking like, well, maybe it's the green or the blue, you know? And maybe the fan was bad. Well, there's something called startup voltage or start voltage that I had no idea about until this happened to me. And evidently, from the power supply or from the actual communication board on the Drobo, it doesn't send enough start voltage to the fan to get the coils to the coil to get the thing going. You know, it had the right rating and the right voltage to run the fan at a steady state, but the fan was requiring more start voltage than the Drobo circuit board could supply to it.
Hmm.
Yeah, there's a good time, right?
So what's next on that?
Well, I had to scrap the fan, and then I had to go back and try to find something that was probably equally as noisy as the original one was, didn't require as much start voltage. I had no idea that even existed. I just figured, you know, you get the fan, you know, it's the right cubic feet per minute, it's the right voltage, boom, that it would work. And that spec, by the way, FYI, is not shown anywhere on the product page or the product leaflet for this particular fan that I bought. There's nothing here that talks about start voltage. But because it was a four-wire fan, and some of those other wires are for regulating the speed of the fan. So if you had a more sophisticated control, I think the blue and the green, you can, you know, oscillate it back and forth if you needed to. You know, it just was a little bit more sophisticated. So scrap that. I told them, look, we'll shut it down. If you need to use it, let's turn it on. It's in half a state of assembly back in their office, and I got to circle back there and try to fix it.
Oh, this is mid-incident. Okay, so...
Yeah, I'm, you know, what should have been only an hour, you know, I'm there 2 hours, and I'm basically a fan that doesn't work.
Oh, man. You know, you get into those things because we figure, okay, I'm a smart guy. I can figure this out. And I've done similar corrections or repairs on similar products. So why not? I can throw in a fan. And sure. Then you run into something like this completely unexpected. And you did your due diligence. I mean, you said nothing in the documentation stated as such. So you were completely thrown at the time of installation. That kind of blows.
This guy wrote a very detailed blog post, and he recommended one of the three fans that I bought. And it should have been fine, but it could be that his particular vintage of Drobo. Now, I was using a FS, which is a network attached Drobo. There's some, you know, direct attached storage that Drobo makes, so it could have been a variant in the power supply. Who the hell knows? But that was a big waste of time.
Those are never fun.
Let's take a moment to talk about our sponsor this week, FlexDesk from Rooted Consulting. FlexDesk is a flexible help desk service supported by the highly qualified and experienced team at Rooted Consulting. FlexDesk allows you to quickly and easily scale your business without having to hire a full-time employee. By using the FlexDesk service, it allows you to focus on customer support, it gives you peace of mind, and it allows you to provide a great customer experience.
In fact, we recently had the opportunity to interview Jeremy LeCompte and Daniel Allen of FlexDesk on episode 248, and they explained to us the nature of their service and how it worked for their customers. And be that first line of defense when people call in, so you're left to do your job and concentrate on your tasks when you're on site at a client.
The primary purpose of FlexDesk would be tier one, tier two, business clients as well as residential clients. Because we are a consultancy as well as a FlexDesk outsource, we do have the ability to schedule level three support when necessary and when able, something that we offer as a FlexDesk solution.
Absolutely. Everyone on our team is at least macOS Support Essentials certified. Many of us have much more than that.
With your direction, Ruta Consulting will familiarize themselves with your customers and integrate themselves into your business. Ruta Consulting responds to tickets, answers phone calls, and supports your customers just like you would. To get started with Ruta Consulting's FlexDesk, go to rootedconsulting.org/FlexDesk.
I spent most of the day not on client sites at all, but doing phone calls all day. And I just really love those days so much more when I can do them. And they're few and far between just because of all the running around we have to do as consultants. Mm-hmm. But today was, even though I was busy, I didn't have to be anywhere. So I feel like more energized today for, you know how it goes. You come back from like a two or three a day stops and you're kind of beat. Right? Especially as we get older, like you and I, man. I know young Joe, he doesn't have these problems.
No, he's too young.
Yeah. But so today I feel kind of energized, but you know, I have a couple of days coming up where I'm going to have to be running around and you know, you're spending those times either doing a repair or crawling under desks or doing what you need to do. I find I'm a little bit more sore these days than I used to be. Kind of a bummer.
Yeah. Welcome to my world, Sam. But wait till you reach my age. You really feel crappy.
Oh, great. That's what I have to look forward to?
To shift gears here real quick, do you remember a couple of shows ago I suggested a website where you could go and it could create a temporary password and you could email that to a client?
I do.
I found another one. It's called PrivNote, and I'd like you to go there now. PrivNote.com. This one looks a little bit slicker than the last one I recommended. And basically, you can create a customized note or a password. You could create a manual password. And you can also set it so that it self-destructs after reading it. And you can get notified when the person reads it and the note is destroyed. Now, Joe, of course, who's suspicious of everybody and everything, he was saying, well, what's to say that they actually destroy the password? But it doesn't matter. It's safer than just sending some piece of information through the email. And if you have two-factor authentication where this is part of it and then you talk to the client online. But it looks pretty slick. The website itself is registered in Uruguay. Because I just wanted to see where like PrivNote was from. Who knows? But it's just something to use, which kind of makes you appear a little bit more professional. I had mentioned when we talked about this last time, I would love and I would pay money for some sort of a developer to come up with this, and you could run it off of your own server, either through like Amazon Web Services or your own Mac Mini server in your office, and you could actually have your own self-destructing automatic note password thing with your branding on it. That would be really slick.
I think that should be the motto too, your own self-destructing thing. That works. But yeah. Wait, this is an opportunity, Jerry. Why don't you start working on development?
Right away, Sam. After I get that fan in the Drobo, I'll be working on that.
That just reminds me of how many times I've had family members say, I got an app idea. Can you help me make it? It happened to me recently with my father-in-law.
Yeah, now you look it up and, you know, usually when somebody has an idea, there's like 10 different apps that are doing the same thing from the app store of their idea.
Right.
That nobody thought of yet.
Of course.
Yeah.
Tell me how you feel about this. So I don't know how you work, but I've noticed a trend about myself that I don't know that I've talked about this before, but I find that, and this, I think this was my way even in high school and college, the more time I have leading up to, let's say, a project or a big meeting to present something or, you know, something where you have time to collect yourself, do research, and do all you need to do to present well, I find I procrastinate. I just don't understand myself. Sometimes I know, okay, I have 2 weeks. I have a good amount of time where I can put this project together. I can make a good presentation. I can tell them why we went this direction, why they should spend this money. And I find myself midnight the night before actually spending the time to do it. I have a big presentation tomorrow for a company that could land us a decent amount of business. And I'm scrambling today, trying to finally put the time and effort into it to build it. When you have enough time, Jerry, do you actually plan out well, or are you a procrastinator like me?
Sometimes I do. It all depends on the nature of the product that we're presenting or who we're presenting to. I mean, it's kind of a mixed bag. I always find I'm more productive when I'm really busy and I've got like a completely full schedule and then I still have to do things. But you know how it is when you've got a family and you're trying to run your own business. There's no time and you're constantly working up until 8 or 9 o'clock at night and you're not really even spending your time with your kids and you're trying to juggle that. So it's a mixed bag for me, but I know that feeling and I know exactly what you're talking about. I guess it all depends on how serious the client is. I think if it was a bigger client and it was new business, but if it was pre-existing business and they just want to know why you want to go through these upgrades, sometimes I feel like I don't prioritize it quite as well. But if it's a new client, I think they get more of my time and attention.
I just find that in life, I'm a procrastinator. That's what I know about myself, and I can't change it.
I had an interesting experience. We just brought on a new client. We're still on a time and materials relationship at this point, but they had some sort of managed service from a local company, and it didn't go very well. They finally realized that they need some sort of help. So we're going in there and we're just going after a lot of the low-hanging fruit and trying to make things better for them. But one of the things is they're a professional organization. They're a design group. I have never done this before. When I made my first in-person call to them, and they basically lined me up to come in and do some consulting for them over the phone, sight unseen. But when I did arrive, I wore a tie with a Mac-branded shirt. It went well. I have never done that before. It went a long way.
A tie?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Like a MacWorks branded shirt or an Apple shirt?
I think I did a MacWorks one. I think actually the very first time didn't even have any logo on it at all. You know, sometimes my wife pushes me in a direction of not wearing any branding. She says, "You look like a gas station attendant." So, I think that speaks more to my appearance than what I'm wearing, you know? I think it could be the axle grease. You know what I mean? Sometimes you wear that and you kind of look like, you know, you should have that. What is the paper hat for the guys that used to like sling hamburgers? They'd wear that.
Yeah, the McDonald's guys.
Yeah, you know, like the old fashioned paper hat. Sometimes when you have branding on it, sometimes it kind of makes you look sort of like that. And then they're surprised when they go like, "Oh, this is your company?" So she's got a good point. But this tie, I think, locked the deal for me. I'm just throwing that out there for any listeners.
Well, yeah, it could depend on the client too and how they dress or how they recognize an appearance. It's always based on that. I used to tend to overdress until I got to know the client. And I've been to, well, one time it was a pretty large client, so I went in a full-on suit. And that was uncomfortable as hell because I own two suits. One's a funeral suit and the other one's a wedding suit. That's how I roll. I don't really feel comfortable dressed like that. I have a few different shirts with the company logo. I also don't like to really wear them. I mean, it also has the Apple on the sleeve. You know, it's pretty nice looking, I think. I don't feel as comfortable wearing that clothing for whatever reason.
Oh, you also have the two suits and you have the cape and the sword, right, from your sister's wedding. That's new, right?
Yeah, I haven't found a good excuse to wear that to a client yet, but when I do, I'll be sure to take pictures.
Yeah, if you were Remy from the Netherlands, it would be a natural thing to just show up in the cape.
Super Remy.
Yeah, super Remy. I think it all depends on the client. You know, this is one of those things where I had not met them in person, but of course you do your due diligence and you look them up on the web and, you know, I saw pictures of the interior of their building and the team and that sort of thing. And I'm like, these look like Thai people. And it worked.
It wasn't like a stock picture of someone pointing to a presentation, right? Like,
no, that's on my website. Two guys, I have no idea who they are, and they're pointing to a Mac computer, and those are...
And they're looking very interested and intrigued.
Yeah, exactly.
I have this one client that pays us or has paid us annually, and it's a pretty substantial number. I received word a couple of years ago that the head honcho was thinking of trimming down some outside consulting services and they already had internal IT. Why did they need us? So every time around the same year, I would get this pit in my stomach because it was such a large amount of money. I still do. It would make me feel uncomfortable for at least 45 days, which is their payment terms. until it actually hit the bank account. And then I'd start to feel, okay, I got 12 months to breathe again. So nothing's happened over the last couple of years. They haven't said, okay, we're done with you guys, as according to upper management. Recently, they were asking about payment structure, and we just moved them to monthly, which even though, of course, they could stop after a couple of months or something, it makes me feel a little bit calmer. For one thing, it's just kind of even keeled throughout the year, and that helps me financially. But also, I think it's easier to just overlook as a line item. Whereas if you see a big chunk of money coming out as a line item, you might be like, what's this? Why are we spending this kind of money on this IT consultant? Whereas a smaller monthly payment can kind of go under the radar and unnoticed. You know what I mean?
Especially if they're doing a credit card debit. A lot of our consultants, and I believe you and Joe have mentioned that, when you use that, it's a lot more manageable for a client. It's just an expected expense. The number doesn't look as big. Yeah, that's always a big concern. You know, we have some very, very small contracts, probably by comparison. And I wouldn't even call them contracts, but they're server maintenance. Sometimes we'll give a significant discount if they do pay 12 months out in advance. And we have had a lot of clients this year looking at their bottom line and not necessarily coming back to us to sharpen our pencil and look at that number again, but definitely looking at IT costs. And it's amazing, you know, how long a company potentially can limp along with really inferior IT support. This client that I'm speaking of, where I wore the tie, they had another company providing them ongoing support. Scratch my head wondering exactly what they were doing, really in a sad state of affairs. So things have to get really bad sometimes in a company before they actually take notice that things have tanked in the IT world. So sometimes they don't really put as much time and attention to it as they should.
I just like the idea of you wearing I need a picture.
We could arrange that.
You just wear like a t-shirt with your logo on it and a tie over the t-shirt. That's a style.
All right. Some good-natured ribbing here. You've taken months of us talking about you in the orange Jamf jumpsuit. So, you know, you dish it out and I'll take it. I'll continue to take it. Well-deserved ribbing here from Sam. Just a little follow-up on my Crash Plan Pro-E server escapade. Escapade is probably a too strong a word, but I had mentioned several shows back that I had migrated over to a virtual machine running Linux to bring my CrashPlan Pro-E server off of the Mac platform, which they announced was end of life. And again, this is for CrashPlan Pro-E server. And we've only got a handful of clients, just 11 people who are subscribed to our service, a little small boutique service. So I had moved it over to Linux so I could continue updating the CrashPlan Pro-E server. And that's gone okay. Originally started out on Parallels. Parallels in Linux, Ubuntu to be exact, it runs okay. I was having trouble with my store point would stay mounted. My initial store point wanted to move over to like a RAID 1 config for my main store point and then have another drive attached as sort of like a backup store point. For whatever reason, Parallels, and as it turned out, VMware, don't really like drives attached, even if they're formatted to ext4. They don't like drives, at least virtual machines, in RAID 1. I had some problems. So anyway, I switched the Parallels installation over to VMware. VMware seems to be a lot better solution if you are going to be running Linux in a virtual machine. And that's been running pretty well for me. I'm still running into a little bit of a problem being able to mount this one, this RAID 1 drive in both, like I said, Parallels and VMware, basically unsuccessful. So I have a secondary drive, which I'm just doing a rsync to back up the store point on a nightly basis. You know, your mileage will vary. Again, I had been looking for a solution for quite some time, ever since CrashPlan did announce end of life, because I wanted to try to keep this Pro-E server going if I could. It hasn't been an easy road.
Yeah, I mean, it represents a little bit of money for you too. So of course you want to keep that going. I personally have been a VMware person myself. I don't usually virtualize Linux. So that's interesting to note that there is noticeable difference between VMware and Parallels and how well it runs.
It just seems that VMware is a little bit more stable in Linux. Parallels seems to be a little bit more dodgy, but your mileage might vary on that.
How do you feel about upcharging for services if you're managing it all? I don't know. Let's take Office 365, for example. The client wants you to set it all up and get their users set up and bill directly through you. Would you tend to upcharge that and put a little fee on top of the per user? Or would you just charge for your time and call it a day?
Absolutely. Just from what I've heard from other consultants, including our friend Ryan Grimes, I mean, this is a common thing to do, charge more and just give them a complete all-you-can-eat solution, including local backup and taking care of their Office 365 accounts. So yeah, no, I would think you would be completely justified in charging an upcharge and doing all the management for them. Absolutely.
Yeah, I'm in that boat. I go different ways depending on the client, I guess, but I do... I mean, it is your time managing it and doing what you need to do. So I guess the question also becomes how much you want to show them those details of billable, or do you give them what we call the magic number, or do you do a line by per user for this cost, this amount? Once you show them those breakdowns, some people prefer to see that or do it that way, but then it also brings about possibly questions. Hey, I saw marketing from Office 365 and they show it as $825 a user. Why are you charging me $1,250?
Right. Shopping out the rates if you break it too far down. And, you know, people do that with their auto mechanic too. Probably better with just going in with a magic number. They decide that they want you to manage it or they don't.
Speaking of the stuff that we learned at ACES with Ryan Grimes and Will O'Neill and all those guys talking about some of the intriguing parts about how to bill your clients and what to use in terms of technology that you're familiar with. Another thing that stuck in my mind, which I actually do, is contractually deciding on not only what is covered, but specifically what is not covered. And I think that can be a gray area if you don't specifically exclude something from your contract paperwork, that people could interpret things in different ways and say, well, aren't we paying you managed services? Why aren't you doing this? So I found that it stuck in my head when he said it. I think it was Will O'Neill that said it. I can't remember. So I apologize if I'm not giving the right person credit. But I already have it in my paperwork, thanks to our friend David Sparks. But I think it is an interesting point to stress again, to talk about as you build out whatever contract paperwork you have, to be specific about what you do not cover and what would be essentially a project fee or outside services.
Okay. Yes, absolutely, Sam. I think it's really important to specify what you don't do, especially if you have a consultancy like myself where it's just one guy. I've always been really careful not to spread myself too thin because I'm always afraid that there's going to be too much and there's going to be things that are going to fall through the crack and eventually I'm going to pay for it in the long run by clients circling back and saying, well, you know, this is on your contract that you said you were going to do this and, you know, we lost this email from, you know, one of our employees and you were supposed to be backing that up and what happened? And you don't want to overpromise and underdeliver. The holiday weekend finished up for me with a client who is down the street from our office, Time and Materials. They travel. They recently came back. Time Machine wasn't up and running, so we got that working again. There was no mobile backup on their portable laptop, so we signed them up for Crash Plan. And sometime during the course of the weekend, they had a visitor, which was their nephew, and I got a report from the nephew on this person's Mac that they made an assessment of. So this landed in my inbox. Ugh. And they said, we had my nephew took a look at my laptop. Here's what he found. What do you think?
And their nephew's 13 years old.
Well, he could be, or he could be 33. But he said, you know, I don't think you need two backups. I think you either need Time Machine or you need cloud-based backup. We tended to disagree there. And then he was basically reporting back that neither one of these computers was backed up. And, you know, I had to reply, well, yeah, they weren't because we just paid you a visit and you've been traveling and we just reinstated your time capsule and we just signed you up for this cloud-based backup. So we agree with everything, you know, that's been stated in that regard. It really gave me pause because those are the types of things where you're being either second-guessed by a family member or you're being second-guessed by another employee or someone anecdotally within the company that's saying things that are going against what you're recommending. And we talked about this a little bit last week, but, you know, once again, it reared its ugly head.
Screw that, man. That is one of the most aggravating things I think I can come across. A nephew or someone that's like walks in and be like, hey, Aunt so-and-so, why did this guy tell you to do this?
Right.
That's stupid. Right. It's aggravating on so many levels. The employee part, that part annoys me too, but in some way, I can see that happening in more of a business environment. But when it becomes a family member or a friend, when you're helping a residential client, it aggravates me even more so. I don't know why, but it's still someone questioning either my integrity or my decision making.
Right, right. My tendency is to not take my time, just to like fire back a reply.
Did you go crazy on them?
I cut and pasted little sections and just basically commented in bold caps. Not bold caps all the way across, but in bold letters.
That would have been good.
Yeah. You know, agreed. Backup's not complete because we just started it. Like, what's the problem here? There's no problem.
Yeah. You want the check? I'll give you the check. Leave me alone.
Exactly.
And thanks again to Rooted Consulting's FlexDesk. To learn more, go to rootedconsulting.org/FlexDesk.